Streaming live 24/7. RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to another episode of the Valor Hour. A look into everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. Thanks for joining us, and remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. This week, we talk with one of the headliners of next week's cage fights at the Cowboy and recap a monumental night of action as Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor clashed head-to-head inside the ring. I'm Casey Oxendine, joined by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, we've had a week or so to catch our breath. Now we head into a big fall lineup with a big head of steam, starting with cage fights at the Cowboy September 8th in Johnson City.
Yeah, man. We've got the Cowboy show next weekend, and then there's a little bit of a lull before we really kind of kick it in hard for October and November. You know, it's going to be a really busy fall.
Well, let's go ahead and head straight into the news. Of course, it was Mayweather and McGregor. It made headlines across the world. Huge sales, $6 million, I believe, was what they reported. It was monumental. Tim, talk about it from the undercard all the way up to this big main event.
Man, it was, it was exciting. The main event was certainly exciting. You know, I didn't regret spending the money on the pay-per-view. You know, we had a good time with it. And, you know, I got to say that the main event was, you know, I guess we'll talk about it first, but, you know, it was an interesting fight. You know, McGregor, he definitely held his own there for the first about the first four rounds or so. He looked good. He was winning. You know, I had him winning. Honestly, I had him winning for sure the first three, I thought. The judges didn't agree. I think they had it a lot more lopsided than what I did. I'm no boxing expert, but it seemed like he was getting the better of him. It didn't seem like Floyd was really throwing back a whole lot the first few rounds. But then once he let McGregor kind of wind himself down, and he really started coming on there in about the sixth round, Floyd started the fight, you know, and there in the, I think in the 10th, it was finally the referee stepped in and they called it. And a lot of people thought it was an early stoppage. You know, I think it would have been pretty cool to have at least a standing eight count or a three knockdown rule or something along those lines. But the tide was definitely turned. You know, it was going the other way for sure. And so, you know, Mayweather certainly showed that he's the better boxer. But I think Conor made a very good accounting of himself and certainly didn't embarrass himself out there. And they put on a good show. But I got to say, the rest of the card, you know, I really tried to be all in. You know what I mean? I was really trying to make the most of that whole card and really kind of like do some research and bet on it and get into it. But I found myself having a hard time, honestly, like keeping my attention for any of the other fights. Honestly, like I was off wandering, and you know, that's just kind of boxing for me is that, you know, 10 and 12 rounds when there's not a whole lot of action is hard for me to sit through. So you know, overall, I didn't come out of it feeling like I was like more of a boxing fan than I was, which I'm sure is what they were hoping for a lot of these MMA fans. But you know, at the same time, I still thought the main event was good and delivered an exciting fight. It was entertaining for sure.
Well, we discussed this a little bit last week. It might have even been off the record, but there was a possibility that, you know, at first McGregor Mayweather was going to have to be a four round fight because Conor McGregor had never had a professional boxing match, and of course they waived that. It did go on to be 12 round fight, but what, in your estimation, what would you think if they were to dial back boxing, you know, some of those bigger name matchups to four or six rounds just to kind of help the appeal a little bit? You know, a lot of people think that, you know, when you have a 12-round fight, it could help induce a snooze fest. When if you kept it short and sweet, you know, you saw K1 years ago did that, and it really made for fireworks. What do you think that might be something that could improve the fanfare of boxing?
You know, I wouldn't argue with that, because there's going to be more of a sense of urgency to make things happen. You can't take a round off if you've only got six rounds to get it done. And maybe even, you know, maybe even eight. But, you know, 12 rounds, I feel like it's just a lot. And honestly, you see guys that are having a game plan for that. And so there are rounds where by design they're taking them off. And, you know, you can't fault them for that. But at the same time, it makes it just for a long, you know, it's one fight is an hour pretty much.
Well, again, monumental, to say the least. And looking forward to what Conor McGregor does next. Mayweather says he's retired. But what is next for Conor McGregor? Who knows? I think he's going to go where the money is. Well, we also had some big mixed martial arts action the same weekend. Of course, Bellator 182 from upstate New York. We saw Khorashov with the TKO victory over Njokuwane. We had Gonzalez over Brennan Ward, round three guillotine. Bruna Ellen defeats Veda Ortega by split decision. And then, of course, AJ McKee, second generation star, defeats Blair Tugman by unanimous decision. Tim, talk about this.
You know, it was at first glance, you would think that it was like, man, you don't want to run against this Mayweather McGregor. They were really the only MMA show running this past weekend. Or there may have been like an LFA show or something, but they were certainly like the main MMA show running. And so they probably had a lot more eyes on them just because the fight world's attention was kind of like really in tune that weekend, you know. So it was a good show. I thought it was good. The Khorashov bounces back off of his loss and beats Chidi there, who missed weight. And again, he's struggled with that a lot lately. So you know, that's a good bounce back win for Khorashov, and it knocks Njokuwane down the ladder. So he was kind of hot coming in there. Gonzalez and Ward was a battle. It was back and forth, you know, and I thought Ward may get in, but Gonzalez ended up kind of weathering that storm that, you know, comes with Brennan Ward in the early goings. Gets the guillotine in the third round. I was kind of in and out, like zoning in and out of the Bruna Ellen and Veda Ortega fight. I really didn't get to watch a whole lot of that. But then I got, you know, McKee's a guy that they're definitely building. You know, he's maybe 9-0 now. That's a guy that I'm imagining they're going to start angling towards the title here before long. Tugman was tough. I mean, he was a pretty tenacious, like tough, you know, grizzled wrestler type, but he just had no avenue to victory, and he really just couldn't do anything with him. That said, you know, he went all the rounds, but McKee with a pretty dominant decision there. Overall, pretty clean card.
Yeah, and you know, AJ and Antonio kind of remind me of Ken Griffey Jr. Of mixed martial arts. You know, because you had Antonio McKee, a guy that I was actually on the mats with in a big tournament way back in the day. Wow. And I know firsthand that the guy is very, very intense. But he was not a guy that was a headliner in the UFC. I think he made it one time, and it was late in his career, and so he was unable to really do anything with it. But he was a guy that everybody in the industry definitely knew. But I think that his son, when he comes to the forefront, he is on another level. He is really a new generation type star. So it's really interesting. I see those as the Ken Griffey Senior and Junior of MMA. Now, another notable undercard fight was the Ricky Rainey fight. Of course, that's a guy that we know very well in our region. He defeated Mark Stevens by unanimous decision. That one really stood out to me. Anything else that stood out to you on the undercard?
Yeah, man. You know, I thought Ricky Rainey looked good. I was hoping to see a finish. I'm sure he would like to have seen a finish, but you know, Stevens is tough. He's a guy that's had, you know, 30 plus fights and, you know, been in the UFC. So it was still a good win for Rainey. The Georgie Karahanian and Daniel Pineda fight. You know, Pineda was really having his way with him and was on his way to winning, but Karahanian, he cut him with an up kick. Hit him with it was a well-placed, you know, precise up kick, but it cut him, and they stopped it. They called a stoppage to the action to let the doctor come look at it, and they just waved it off right there. And so, you know, kind of a good fortune there for Karahanian, and kind of shitty luck for Pineda there. And then Chris Honeycutt, he keeps rolling there. He beats shit out of Kevin Casey, and man, I can't imagine Casey's got too much, you know, too much more left in him.
Well, moving on, we've already had a big week, you know, this week of mixed martial arts. Of course, a big Tuesday night contender series. That was week number 8, and it is the season finale. We saw a guy that's very prevalent here in the Southeast, Alan Crowder, with a big win over Dontell Mays. And that was by round 3 TKO. And word is he got the contract.
Yeah, he did, man. It was kind of crazy because, like, Mays had a lot of hype coming in. Like, that he was a pretty massive favorite, probably the second biggest favorite on the board, and came in with just a lot of hype and I was pretty disappointed, man. I wasn't impressed in the least. He was gassed by the end of the first round and really just kind of mailed it in, it seemed like. Crowder fought well. I honestly didn't think that Crowder was impressive enough to get the contract. I didn't think he would get the contract. But as Dana said, they need heavyweights, and so they're not saying that Crowder looked bad. Or maybe it was just that Mays looked real so bad that it made it hard. Maybe it was just that I was more disappointed that Crowder didn't get him out of there quicker, I guess, because both guys were kind of gassing there at the end. And but congrats, man. You know, he's 9-2 now, beats a very highly regarded prospect and got that contract.
Yeah, and Crowder has really grown and blossomed a whole lot. You know, a lot like Ovince St. Preux. Back in the day, Crowder had a few losses on his career. He was, you know, it was really close there, and we didn't know if he was going to be able to go all the way or not. And he really turned things around, and he has taken things to the next level and has become one of those elite-level fighters, and truly, in my opinion, deserving of being in the UFC regardless. So I'm excited about that. Any of the go ahead and give a rundown of the rest of the fights for this contender series.
There was another female fight. I think they only had this is the second one they did. This Lauren Mueller beat Kelly Velasco by a pretty dominant decision, I thought, and she took that fight on like a week's notice. And so she ended up getting the contract as well. And, you know, in another situation where the female division is shallow, she was only 3-0, I think now 4-0, but got the contract, you know, comes in on short notice. She's got a good look and dominated a decision. And not a lot of decision winners have gotten contracts. You know, like most of the people that are getting the contracts are winning by, like, you know, spectacular knockout. Not even a lot of submissions have gotten contracts so far. They must have really liked her, you know. Then Casey Kinney, the guy that beat CJ Hamilton back in the second week, who's very good. He had a really close one against Adam Antolin, who had been on one of the seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. So that was a pretty high-level fight. And it was back and forth. Antolin started to come on at the end. I thought Casey Kinney won. I think most people thought Kinney did enough to win. I think like Dana and those guys were even like pissy with the decision. But they gave it to Adam Antolin. Split decision. I don't think either guy got the contract. I think if Kenny had gotten the win, he probably would have got the contract. He's pretty legit. He's good. Bevan Lewis is a guy that he's out of the Georgia scene, actually. His management had tried to get him on some cards here just as recently as like a year ago when he was first starting out. And I think he's moved out to New Mexico now with Jackson Winklejohn. But he had a great performance over Elias Urbina, the brother of Hector Urbina, and he had a round 2 TKO over him, and he's like already drawing comparisons to John Jones. He looks a lot like John Jones in stature, and it's one of his training partners now, so he's got a lot of hype behind him. They didn't give him the contract, but they said they're going to put him in their developmental league, which I'm not even sure what that is, unless it's just LFA. They didn't really go into details unless there's something new coming, you know, down the pipe as far as the UFC developmental, but that's what he's doing. Then Matt Frivola in the main event looked awesome. That guy's good. He's an exciting guy. He's at Gracie Tampa, I think, down there. He had Matt Arroyo in his corner. And that's another guy that's kind of like been, you know, tossed around as being brought in to fight for Valor a few times, and so it's kind of cool just seeing these guys from the region that you just know fighting here and getting these opportunities. He beats Luke Flores round 2 arm triangle, and he got a contract too. So they gave out 3 last night, and it was a good night of fights. It was exciting. There wasn't anything that I like, you know, zoned out on.
Well, the Contender Series definitely provides something that aspiring fighters up until now never had. And of course, for the last 20 years, we've worked hard to get guys into the UFC and have aspired to big things like that. But there really was no avenue, particularly for the fighters here in the Southeast. So it's really good to see this is out there and giving opportunities to fighters, and they're actually taking advantage of it and getting those contracts. So it's really cool. Now, moving on to upcoming events, of course, the big UFC Fight Night 115, that's from the Netherlands, and that's Saturday at 3 p.m. on Fight Pass. And, you know, UFC's been almost on a month break here. Now, obviously, Dana White was heavily involved in this Mayweather-Conor McGregor deal, and, of course, they were getting plenty of fanfare. But it seems like they've kind of rested up a little bit, and now they're coming with a new batch.
You know, it's I was just thinking about this the other day, and I wonder, you know, because the UFC doesn't take that much time off ever. You know, that was like a long, it was like nearly a month. I wonder if that was like somehow in the negotiations at all. If, you know, it was like, you guys, you know, UFC won't run for X amount of weeks leading up to this, and all efforts will be pushed by everyone involved to make this motherfucker just a huge, huge deal. You know, can you see that? Isn't it odd?
I 100% can see it, and it exactly. I mean, you know as well as I do, when you're matching events close proximity, you know, you're certainly not going to put out a big plethora of stars and scatter them throughout the month. So it makes perfect sense that that's what it was, and it turned out to be the biggest haul in a long, long time. So, yeah, I mean, very smart thinking there. Now, this matchup, or this event coming up, Fight Night 115 is headlined by Alexander Volkov taking on Stefan Struve. Lots of numbers here in these records.
Yeah, these guys are two really experienced guys. They're like really tall dudes. They're like both like skyscrapers. It's pretty cool. I'm sure it'll look cool in the pictures. And, you know, this is, you know, it's not a star-studded card, but I think your MMA fans are just going to be kind of jonesing for MMA now coming off this boxing weekend. So I still think it should get some attention from your hardcores. And, you know, Struve has, I was looking today, he has the third most wins of any UFC heavyweight in history. That's crazy, isn't it? And he's been in the UFC for nearly a decade.
Is he the tallest fighter in the UFC ever?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know of anybody taller, but I'd hate to speak and not know. But like, he's got to be one of them. I mean,
Tim Sylvia's up there, but I think Struve is like 7 feet tall. There are bigger guys like Giant Silva and those guys that fought in Pride. But as far as the UFC, you know, with the weight limitations, I don't know that there has ever been anybody that big.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Nuts. And Volkov's big too, you know. I mean, I would venture to say, you know, he's like 6'7" or some such. You know, he's a big guy, you know. And you know, former Bellator champion, he's been on a hot streak. So who knows? You know, it's in the home country there of Struve. So he's getting to fight at home and headline. I'm sure that's a big deal there this weekend. And man, the odds are close. I think they opened Volkov at -130, which is essentially even. So who knows what'll happen? Struve's tough. You never want to count Struve out. He can win from lots of different ways.
Well, also a big co-main event: Talia de la Oliveira taking on Marion Renau. A good matchup there in the bantamweight division.
It was supposed to be Jermaine Durandami, which would have been a much bigger matchup. She pulled out last week, and I don't really know about the Brazilian girl here, Talita. I see she's 5-1, and in a small world coincidence, she was supposed to fight Alexa Connors at the LFA event they had in Charlotte here a month or so back, and Connors had to pull out because of a weight situation, but just, you know, that's about the only thing I know of this girl is that, you know, she was about to fight on that LFA card. I'm sure she's probably a skilled, you know, submission fighter. Renaud, though, is she's tough. She's like gritty. She's like, you know, kind of she's like this, you know, just like this tough, like middle aged woman. She's like 40 years old and is, you know, she's going to be a tough one, you know, to take on short notice in your UFC debut.
Yeah, and I saw that draw with Beth Correa, and it was a very good fight. She is very tough and rugged and comes to fight. So definitely looking forward to that one. Any other matchups on this card that really stand out to you?
You know, I think the other only other fight that I mean, I think there's some pretty good names as far as like, you know, Eastern European prospects go on the undercard, which will probably be fun to watch. But no, I can't really speak with a whole lot of knowledge on them. I will say that I think that the Leon Edwards and Brian Barberina fight on the main card will be really good. That's, you know, Barberina is kind of becoming that spoiler. You know, he knocks off the guys he's not supposed to knock off and, you know, beat Sage Northcutt, of course. And Leon Edwards, though, he's won three in a row. He's a very exciting striker. His takedown defense is gotten much better there. And I think that Barberina is going to probably be forced to just stand and trade with a very, very skilled striker in Edwards.
Well, that, of course, it's a big matchup, a big lineup this Saturday. But let's move on. That's it for the news, but it's time for the Valor Hour Q&A segment, and everybody knows what that is. That's when you, the listener, gets the opportunity to ask Valor Fights President Tim Loy your questions, and we're going to be in the mud a little bit with this first one, Tim. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, we heard all of the tweets about it. Are you a fan of the Snoopcast on the Contender Series?
Absolutely. I love it. You know, that's, in my opinion, it is, as much as most people probably don't want to admit it, we've all had very similar conversations sitting in our living room with friends in our formative years of this sport when we're, you know, kind of first learning about it. And you're sitting with a buddy that knows about it. And I think we've all had conversations very similar. And so, yeah, you know, I don't think people should be so uptight about it. You don't have to. You don't have to watch it. It's not like it's the default commentary. You know, if you want to hear the straight broadcast, that is certainly easy to do. And, you know, if the people that want to have more fun with it, I love it. You know, my wife enjoys it, too. It's what we do on Tuesdays. You know, it's like probably the only reason that my wife is willing to watch MMA at primetime on Tuesday nights.
You know, Snoop received a little bit of backlash for his comments on some of the fighters, including Daniel Cormier. I think he may have called him the crybaby and that sort of thing. And, of course, that got a little bit of a backlash. What do you think about a guy who is an uneducated fan, per se, making those sort of comments about legends of the sport, essentially?
Well, you know, again, I think that most anything that the guy says has to be taken with a grain of salt. You know, I think a lot of this is all very off the cuff and they're trying to entertain, you know, and it is entertaining. I can see, I guess, where people could it could rub them the wrong way. But again, this is not the main broadcast that the UFC is pushing. It's very much a kind of sideshow, you know, entertaining thing. So yeah, I think people get too bent out of shape over things like that.
Yeah, I agree too. I think this is meant to be fun, and it's not supposed to be an educated analysis, if you will. So I think that the Snoopcast should continue as well. Question number two, which local talent would you like to see on the Contender Series next?
Oh, wow. There's always these where, you know, that doesn't just narrow me down to one. I can name a few. You know, I think that there's several that would be deserving. I think Luis Pena would certainly be a guy that should get a crack at that. I think that, Nick Gertz is another guy, Sydney Wheeler. You know, there's several, Lindsey Jones that are, you know, contender prospects, in my opinion, that would go out there and compete just fine.
All right. Moving on. Question number three, from a promoter's standpoint, does having that Contender Series vet tag on your resume increase the value of a fighter in your eyes?
That's a good one. You know, it's early. It's so early to say because it's, you know, it's just started. It's the first time they've done it. You've still got to be a pretty hardcore fan, I think, to be dialed into Fight Pass and keeping up with a Tuesday night thing. I think if it were on television and not Fight Pass, then the answer would 100% be yes. I don't think it hurts, you know. I mean, I certainly, you know, as kind of an MMA nerd, I do keep up with that stuff. So I don't know. I don't think it hurts. I guess, sure, it helps some.
You think maybe it sits a little there below Bellator, but maybe above an LFA?
I would say that it's certainly above an LFA. I would say that it would be above a Bellator prelim, but below a Bellator main card. How's that?
There you go. Absolutely. All right, moving on. Next question. When can we expect announcements to start rolling out for Chattanooga?
Well, we've had a couple.
I've seen a few.
We had two. One yesterday and one today. You know, we've already announced Chandler the Hammer Cole is going to make his way down to Chattanooga to fight for the first time against Dustin Dyer. That is going to be an awesome heavyweight clash between two of the more personable and popular heavyweights in our region. That'll be really fun. And then we also announced Derek Kennington. DK will be making his Valor debut. First time we've hosted him. We've had his fighters out here several times now from Fitness Edge and Myrtle Beach, and love working with those guys. And so we really wanted to be able to get DK out here for a fight. And he'll be fighting Jonathan Vineyard, who had a great fight at Worlds Collide. He and Mark Trader was an awesome back and forth war. And he put, even though he lost, he put on a really good fight. He was impressive. So those guys are going to duke it out. You know, it's two head coaches of both of their own gyms going head to head, and black belt versus brown belt. It's a kind of a sneaky good fight, and we'll be announcing a lot more. I can say that Sid the Kid will be making his return on this card. We'll be talking more about his opponent in the coming days, and you know, there's some other guys on the Lindsey Jones, Sweet T will be on the card. We'll be and he'll have a good one. That's a good fight, and I can't wait to announce that one. Tim Boyle is fighting. He's local there. We've got three or four more pro fights that are starting to come together. Cole Farrell, I think, will end up on this card potentially. And then amateurs, you know, we've got, you know, all of Chattanooga's finest. David Robbins will be probably making his last amateur fight. Billy Swanson's on the card. We've got a lot of the top amateurs in that area lined up too, so it's going to be good. I was just talking to my wife today. I think this card could be the best card of the year, honestly, and we say that a lot, but this one is really kind of lining up good.
Well, speaking about the best card of the year, we have one more question, and it kind of falls in line with that. Do you have any plans for other shows outside of Chattanooga and Border Wars before Christmas?
You know, there's a good chance we could do something in December still, with Valor. You know, you and I have got the bar battles, and we've got some things that'll still be going on, you know, in that little, wheelhouse there with, Bristol BFW show with B Watson. Well, who knows what else pops up, but, you know, who knows, December, I would really like to do something. I really have got a few different irons in the fire as to which direction we go. We may hook up with Conflict again and do something down in Macon potentially. That's been kicked around. You know, I'm not sure. So I really can't say yet, but, you know, hopefully we kind of get those type things ironed out here in the next week or two.
All right. Well, that does it for another Valor Hour Q&A segment. Remember, you, the listeners, need to send in those questions. Get them in here, and we will ask Valor Fights President Tim Loy. Put him on the hot seat, if you will, and get down to brass tacks. Now, speaking of getting down to brass tacks, we have a tremendous lineup of guests tonight, and we're going to get right on into that now. We are joined by 2-0 undefeated amateur mixed martial arts fighter Jordan Owenby, and he heads into a big main event next week at the Electric Cowboy. Cage fights at the Cowboy September 8th, and he joins us now. Jordan, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you guys for having me, as always.
Well, man, we're excited as always, you know, to see you throw down. This will be your third fight coming up next weekend at the Electric Cowboy in Johnson City. You'll be main eventing for the first time, and you're taking on Lance Abbott. We have had a bit of turmoil in this fight here. You know, originally supposed to fight Darian Perry, who pulled out yesterday with some bullshit. And, you know, we were able to get Lance Abbott to step in. Now this will be for the first ever 225-pound title that we've awarded. And that's a thing now. You know, the ABC have they've recommended the new weight classes. And now, I guess the cruiserweight there at 225. You know, talk a little bit first about, you know, the matchup with Lance Abbott, how is that different than what you're expecting with Perry, who is more of a wrestler? Abbott's definitely a guy that's going to brawl. And thoughts on the matchup in general, your first ever main event, and if it affects you any, you know, the weight of moving up. You know, you were going to fight at 205 and now it'd be 225.
Oh, yeah. The first point I'd like to make is that I feel that the move to create a weight class at 225 has been a long time coming. I mean, going between 205 and 265 is just ridiculous to me. As somebody who walks around at about 235. Yeah, the main event stage is going to be awesome. You know, unlike a lot of other people that end up in the fight game coming from very different, you know, backgrounds, I've had the pleasure of going with, you know, Team North Carolina to the big national and, you know, international competitions growing up. So I'm used to places with thousands of people stuffed in them. I'm used to the bright lights and the big shows. So that's going to be a factor that's going to benefit me, if anything.
Well, Jordan, talk a little bit about your training, of course, out of ATT there in Asheville. We know Shante Barnes very, very well with Valor Fights. Of course, you're a veteran of Valor Fights as well. But, you know, talk about the training over there. American Top Team, that's a name that speaks for itself. But there in Asheville, a very beautiful location, a very awesome city, but not usually known as a fighting city. But you guys have definitely changed that.
Yeah, I can't do anything but sing the praises of ATT Asheville. We've got Bush Marks over there as our BJJ instructor, the most legitimate of all black belts. I mean, I can't do anything with him, and I'm twice his size. I can take him down, but what happens when we get to the ground is pretty much more a matter of time than anything. And we also have Chris Sautel on our striking side. You know, we have people all the way from, you know, beginners, as I call them, civilians. As a fighter, they do end up getting in the way sometimes, but you can't exactly tell them that because they pay for the rest of us to be able to pursue our art.
So, you know,
it's a great place.
And we know you've got a wrestling background, Jordan. For those that aren't familiar with that, you know, that haven't seen you fight on our shows before, talk a little bit about your background before getting into MMA. As we've mentioned before, you've got a wrestling background. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. Wrestling has been a huge part of my life since I was 8. I wrestled all the way through at Davidson College until I unfortunately re-injured my neck and was, you know, unable to continue for rather obvious spinal reasons. But something that not a lot of people would know was my first martial art was actually Taekwondo when I was a little kid. And then I also indulged in some boxing coming through middle school. So I've had a martial arts education beyond just wrestling. But when it comes to the number of hours that I've put in with wrestling, you know, if you're going to walk into that aspect of my game, you're running into the teeth of something you don't want to run into.
Have you found that your game has improved a lot over the last, say, year? Because I felt like, you know, the two times that we've seen you, you won both fights. But, you know, you really dominated Charles Philpott, who is a deceptively pretty good, you know, he's pretty good. You know, he doesn't really look like much, but he's a pretty tough guy. And you really, really ran through him in a much more impressive fashion, I felt like. And then you won your debut against Will Watterson, who, in my opinion, probably wasn't as skilled an opponent as Philpott.
No, you're absolutely right on that analysis. The first fight going in against Watterson, you know, the first time stepping into a cage, first time as an MMA competitor, you're not exactly going to be able to do everything the way that you've been envisioning it. So I ended up falling back to what is essentially instinct to me. Somebody throws a big right and I'm going to take him down. That's just 101 to the way I go about this game. But every time that I go into practice, my goal is always to get even just an incremental amount bigger. You can never expect big overnight changes or anything, but as long as you make every training session valuable, then that's the way that you keep steadily improving. And if you keep improving, you're going to end up at the top if you've got, you know, just a sprinkle of talent behind it.
So, you know, you were, you, sorry about that. I figure, you know, while we're on the subject, we'll have a quick impromptu session of Fighters Court here, just so we can give Darian Perry his due if Judge Oxendine's ready.
Well, yeah, let's all talk right. a little bit about it. You know, what's the prosecution have to say here?
Well, I'll play the part of the prosecution. Essentially we had Darian Perry. He came, essentially asked us to fight. We didn't go in search of Mr. Perry, but he reached out to us looking to compete on this card, and we originally were hoping to do this fight with John Hall. Hall wasn't able to get the training camp in that he wanted, and so we still wanted to make sure that we had Jordan there in the main event for the title. So it worked out nicely that Darian Perry wanted to fight, and so that was the fight we made. It was the main event, still is the main event, but essentially we got a message from Mr. Perry yesterday letting us know that he had lost his job, and because of that he wouldn't have the money to travel up here. That said, we pay for the travel, so that's neither here nor there. We would have paid for his travel expenses, and then he wouldn't have the money to continue to train leading up to the fight, which is in 9 days at this point. So my argument is the training's over. The cost, the expenses to get here is not a factor, and I've got to say the guy just don't want to fight.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've heard the argument here, and I'm going to have to go ahead and rule on the side of the prosecution. That means Darian Perry shall be electrocuted until his career is dead, dead, dead. Here it is. Oh, man.
That felt good.
I'll tell you what, another one bites the dust, man. Another one fried. So I feel like I've done my part. Real quick, Jordan, go ahead and give your shout-outs where they're due. Teammates, family, friends, everyone that supported you in your career, and also your social media plugs, where we can find you, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth.
All right. So first for the shout-outs, of course, we've got to go right first to my family. And the man who stood with me since day one when I was just a chubby little 8-year-old trying to make my way, Christopher Orham being my dad. And, of course, I got to give big ups to my grandparents, which never, ever miss a fight, depending on if the world's going to end or not. And, of course, my instructors, Bush Marks, Chris Sautel, all the guys at ATC Asheville. And as far as social media goes, you can find me on Facebook. I do not have a fighter page because I prefer to, sell the whole package. I'm not trying to hide my personal quirks or anything from prospective fans and, industry and contacts. So you can find me there at Jordan T. Owenby. And you wouldn't be the first person to misspell Owenby. It's Owenby. And then my Twitter, or not Twitter, I'm not on Twitter these days. My Instagram is J, my first initial, and then Owenby, Owenby, 77, just all together. Just check me out. I'm a bit of a quirky, strange person for the MMA community, so I hope I can give you guys some solid entertainment.
Jordan Owenby heads to Cage Fights at the Cowboy, where he vies for cruiserweight gold. Remember, that's September 8th. Get your tickets now at events.com. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
We are joined by Jared Short, 5-1 amateur mixed martial artist, and he heads to Cage Fights at the Cowboy September 8th in Johnson City, Tennessee, where he faces Caleb Langford. Jared, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Casey. Glad to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you, man. First time joining us on the Valor Hour, and you're getting ready for another tough fight. You've been in there with some tough guys here as of late. You're fighting another tough one next weekend. You're taking on Caleb Langford in a middleweight fight. Talk a little bit about that matchup, if you know anything about him. We just saw him fight, at the last event at the VFW a couple weeks ago, and he lost, but he was very impressive in that loss. Both you guys, good grapplers. Just talk a little bit about that match.
Well, like you said, it's kind of a matchup with the grapplers. That's been generally my style, and I watched some tape on Caleb, and it looks like he's a really good grappler too. So, you know, hopefully it should be a good matchup. And, you know, I'm coming off a loss, and, you know, after each loss, you know, you're wanting to really come out and show people that you're still in it, you're still going, you know, you ain't lost any steam. You know, because, you know, a loss, it happens. It's part of the game, you know, but you got to come back. You got to show people you're still there.
Very, very well said, man. And, you know, this is a match that, honestly, Casey and I were just talking. You know, this is a fight that's probably a title-worthy fight, but two guys that are both coming off losses, they're going to be motivated highly to get that taste out of their mouth. I feel like this is a really good front runner for fight of the night. It's probably the fight I'm looking forward the most to. You know, talk a little bit about the training you've had leading up to this. You trained at the Viper Pit there in Hazard with the Beverly brothers, Ken and Stone, some guys that we've been seeing more and more of down here. Talk about your training there and, you know, what you've been doing to get ready for this thing.
Well, you know, like with any fight, you know, cardio's one of the most important things you can get. I've really been working on that. You know, Ken Stone and them, you know, it's kind of like an iron sharpening iron, you know. Everybody knows them. They're tough guys. You about can't outwork them just sometimes. Real hard to outwork. But, you know, it's kind of like us three down here. And, you know, we put in the work, we grind, push each other, you know, we get each other ready. I'll say that about it. We make sure we're ready for every fight.
So Jared, tell me this, man, you know, the first time Tim and I saw you in person was, I guess it was against Pennington. And when I first saw you walk out to the cage, you know, I saw him, I saw you. And of course, the first impression you get is, man, this is maybe a mismatch. And what turned out was that the guy that one would expect to not win, to get beat, actually dominated and looked courageous and brought a tremendous fight. And really, it taught me a whole lot about you, that, you know, with that first experience watching you. Let me ask you, I just wanted to ask you, what from your perspective, what is the best element that you bring into the fight? Now, I know you're a grappler by trade, but is, you know, your heart and intestinal fortitude seems to be at a max. Even in that loss to Toma Walton, you came with everything that you had. You came to win the fight. What are your best attributes? And what are you looking to improve on this time from your last outing?
Well, I'd say one of my best attributes is, you know, I like to press the fight. I don't like to sit back and wait. You know, I think just it's better to press the fight and try to dictate it yourself than just kind of sit back and wait. You know, just because sometimes if you wait, you lose. You know, I like to attack. You know, I like to get out there. I like to bang. I like to get my takedowns. I just like to press the action. I mean, that's just the kind of fighter I am. And, you know, as far as the rest, it's not always the appearance of the guy, but it's kind of like the fight. It's kind of like the dog in the fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, absolutely. Well, we're very, very excited to have you there. You're going to be – have you been to Johnson City? You've been here with Stone before, right?
Well, see, that's the thing. I actually didn't get to go the last time. I got to watch the fight, you know, and I saw him pretty much dominate his guy. And, you know, it looked like a real good atmosphere, honestly.
Well, you're going to have a treat, man, coming here to the mountains for the first time down here, so we can't wait to have you. Now, real quick, I'm going to let you have a chance to give your shout-outs where they're due. Of course, all your teammates, your fans, your friends, and your family, everyone that's helped get you where you're at, and also your social media plugs, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and so forth.
Well, first off, I'd like to holler out to Donald Neese. You know, he's my coach. He's pretty much the one that got me on my journey. You know, I come in want to be a fighter, and that's what he's made me into. You know, Ken Stone, you know, I always want to give Ken Stone Beverly, I always want to give a shout out to them. Viper Pit MMA, you can see us on Facebook. We got a Facebook page, we'll add you to it. You can see all our information, tell you about the upcoming fights, this and that. And, you know, as far as me, I got my Facebook page, Jared Short. You can add me. It'll be a picture of me with my hand being raised in the cage, so you'll know it's me. You add me. You can message me about my upcoming fights. I'll talk to you about it, you know, anything you want to know.
All right, Jared Short. He heads into cage fights at the Cowboy September 8th in Johnson City, Tennessee. Thank you so much, Jared, for joining us tonight.
All right, thank you, Casey. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it being on the show.
All right, that does it for another great lineup of guests, as well as another great Valor Hour episode. Join us next week for the official preview of Cage Fights at the Cowboy. Remember, that goes down September 8th in Johnson City at the Electric Cowboy for the first time ever. And remember, please always share this broadcast. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. We appreciate all the likes, but we need your shares and subscriptions. For myself and Valor Fights President Tim Loy, thanks so much for listening, and join us next week for another episode of the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Right now, it's my pleasure to welcome one of the humblest guys in the business, and I know this is overstated, one of the nicest guys in the business, and that term gets thrown around way too much, although not about me, it doesn't. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ray Glacier Lloyd. When did you get to know Dusty real well? When did that take place?
Well, yeah, ironically, you know, growing up, I mean, I was, you know, even though my brother and I were huge, you know, Briscoe Brothers fans, I was big fans of Dusty and Evel Knievel. And if you were a kid in the 70s, you know, Dusty and Evel Knievel were kind of like that. Everybody loved them, you know. And so when I came to WCW, ironically, I didn't get a chance to really get to know Dusty that well. You know, just our paths just crossed in that sense, you know. I mean, I met him and I'd say, hey, but I was really intimidated by it, you know, because he was freaking Dusty Rhodes. And once again, when he left in 2000, he was talking to Dallas. You know, of course, anybody that knows Dallas's story knows that Dusty was basically Dallas's mentor. And he said, this is how he told it to me, was that he was talking to Dallas and he said, I need like a right-hand guy to help me run my company. Who do you recommend? And he said, help, you know, talk to Ray Lloyd. And he said, I think he'd be, you know, he knew how much I liked that. And, right. And so, I'll never forget. I was driving up at my house and my Grand Cherokee at the time. I was pulling into my driveway and my little flip phone cell phone rings. It might even been a flip phone back then. It might have been a cheaper one than that. But I of course didn't recognize the number, so I just answered it. And he said, Raymond. He was calling me Raymond from day one. I said, yes. I said, who's this? He said, it's the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And I was just like, yeah, I thought someone was joking with me. I said, I was just like, really, Dreams, is you? And he was like, yeah. He said, I'm opening up my own promotion. He said, and I want to talk to you about being a part of it. He said, can you come down here and meet me? He's already got an office, you know, right then. And he eventually ended up calling it Turnbuckle Towers, which is a pretty cool name for it. I go to meet him. Of course, I went to meet him, you know, and he gave me the whole story. He's like, you know, it's always been my dream to run my own promotion. It's going to be called Turnbuckle Entertainment. The wrestling will be called Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling. I need somebody that I can trust to kind of be my right-hand guy to help me run the training center, help me book, you know, run the locker room while I book the shows, you know, do everything. And he said, you know, I'll teach you everything I know. I just need to know that you'll give it 100%. And, of course, you know, I think I said yes before he finished getting all that out of his mouth.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.